Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting.
Good morning and welcome. It's Faith Radio Mornings here on the Faith Radio Network. Now for Wednesday, October 17th, there are just 75 days left the end of the year 2018. Oh, and there's a number of days left till we get to Election Day, so that means there's still more ads and vitriol that we'll have to deal with. We'll talk a little bit about what's going on in terms of political campaigns. Kent Kaiser is a regular guest with us each Wednesday morning from the Communications Department here at the University of Northwestern. He'll join us in the next half hour. One of the notes in the news today out of Canada, as of today, marijuana is legal in Canada. A new law went into effect as of midnight. Later today, we're going to talk with a pastor of a growing church. In fact, it's a multi-site church just outside Toronto. Robbie Simons will join us from Oakville Harvest Bible Chapel, and we'll talk about the church growing in Canada. Some significant growth taking place there. Looking forward to hearing more about that. Also, visit with Robert Dickey. We'll talk about money and work and unemployment and reaching out, how we can make a difference in helping those that are in need. Speaking of helping those that are in need, it was on this date, October 17, the year 1979, Mother Teresa was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. Of course, we know about her life and her impact. One of her great sayings that if you're kind, people may accuse you of being selfish and ulterior motives. Be kind anyway, she says. If you're successful, you'll win some false friends and true enemies. Succeed anyway. If you're honest and frank, people will try to cheat you. Be honest anyway. Says, the good you do today will often be forgotten by tomorrow, but do good anyway. Give the world the best you have, and may it never be enough. Give your best anyway. Or it may never be enough, but says, give your best anyway. So, Mother Teresa getting the Nobel Peace Prize on this date, 1979. Some of what's happened on this date. So I want to say a special welcome to you listening in on 89.1 FM in Bismarck. Got a note from listener yesterday with some thoughts about the morning show and our conversations. I want to say good morning to folks listening in Hartford, 94.1, or if you're in Waterloo at 93.1, or Madison, 104.7, or maybe streaming online. Some, 6,500 friends are listening on the Faith Radio app. And by the way, that's free. You can download that and take us with you anytime, wherever you go. So a special good morning to each of you. Coming up in a moment, Kim Cotola will join us. And we'll talk a little bit about the Gosnell movie. We'll talk about the life issues, not only here, but in places overseas, like Hungary and Norway. And always great to have Kim Cotola from Cradle My Heart Radio with us. Speaking of Mother Teresa, I thought about Kim with this quote from Mother Teresa. It says, your true character is most accurately measured by how you treat those who can do nothing for you. Talk about protecting life at all stages. Coming up with Kim Cotola in just a moment here on Faith Radio Mornings. It's 8 past the hour. Thanks for tuning in here on a Wednesday morning on Faith Radio. I'm Neil Stavem, sitting in for Peter Kapsner. It's Faith Radio Mornings. And I was glad to have back on the line with us Kim Cotola. Kim from Cradle My Heart Radio has been a longtime friend of Faith Radio and, of course, a regular part of the morning show over the years. And so we're always looking forward to the conversations. Kim, welcome back to the show. Good to talk with you this morning.
You know, Neil, if you're inspired by Mother Teresa, Google the rebuke that she gave Hillary Clinton at the National Prayer Breakfast in Washington.
Oh, okay.
We'll just leave it at that. Something for you to look forward to if you enjoyed her pissy way of putting things.
I do remember back in one of those times when she spoke at the National Prayer Breakfast, and you know, she's a little 4 foot nothing lady up on a footstool and kind of telling Bill and Hillary about the way things really are. So yeah, that'd be worth looking for.
She was everyone's fearless grandmother at different moments in her life.
Well, speaking of fearless, let's talk about the Gosnell movie, which of course has not gotten a lot of national press. It didn't get coverage when the trial first came out, and you know, the Kickstarter movie got going, and it did actually pretty significantly in the first weekend. You've had a chance to see it. Just tell us a little bit about your reaction to it.
It's a miracle this movie was ever made, Neil, because there were so many obstacles that the filmmakers faced. And we talked with Ann and Phyllis McAleer and Ann McElhaney. And while they were covering the trial and writing about it and planning the film and all of the adversity that they faced and all of the roadblocks, and I think Kickstarter actually didn't allow them to crowdfund. Mm. I think they went with Indiegogo because the censorship started there, right? People didn't want this story to be told, but it is a true story. And the film, I think, is very faithful to the narrative. And people who contributed to the story getting out, like J.D. Mullane, he writes for the Philadelphia Intelligencer, have reviewed the film and said it absolutely is an accurate depiction of what happened in this case in Philadelphia. And his abortion business was not only despicably filthy and macabre, they found the bodies of 47 babies in the freezer in the basement. And, you know, in the scene in the film when the coroner says, we have reconstituted their bodies to learn, you know, at what age they were aborted. Because he was doing abortions well past Pennsylvania's legal limit at 23 weeks. He would just say that, well, it doesn't matter how old they were. The law says it's the doctor's opinion of how old they were, right? I mean, he made these outrageous statements to the police and in his trial. And, you know, it happened. Abortion rights advocates want to say, and did say at the time that that the case was unfolding in 2015 when the trial was happening, that, well, this is because Pennsylvania restricts abortion access. If you would just quit protesting at the clean facilities on the good part of town, then Gosnell wouldn't have any reason for being. You know, you forced women to going to his business, which is, of course, ludicrous. He was preying on the poor. And he was exploiting women in difficult circumstances for his financial gain. The people who have said that, well, this film doesn't represent the abortion industry, conveniently leave out the boxes of cash that were found in this man's home. And it's a real disgrace that Robin Marty, who's a rabid abortion access advocate, and I think she describes herself as such on her Twitter feed, wrote for NBC News, and shame on them for publishing it, her review of this film, and never mentioned the name of Karnamaya Mungar, the woman from Bhutan who was killed at 41 years of age by Dr. Gosnell because he allowed one of his untrained workers to administer anesthesia to her. And then he dragged his feet when it was obvious that she was dying. And then when they called the authorities an hour and a half later, they weren't able to get her out because his facility wouldn't accommodate a gurney in the halls, and there was so much trash and debris blocking their way. Mrs. Mungar never had a chance when she stepped into his facility. He had earlier killed Shamika Shaw, a young African-American woman. And that she doesn't pay tribute to these deaths, to these women who were killed by this monster, is a real black mark on her reporting, if we want to call it that, and I think discredits everything that she has to say if she wants us to believe that she's any kind of a woman's advocate in advocating for abortion access.
What do you hope, where do you see the outcome of this? I mean, because as you say, those that are supporting the pro-abortion position, they say, well, this doesn't represent the industry. This isn't anything like what really happens. And, again, like you said, if we would stop protesting, that, you know, women wouldn't have to go to situations like this. Do you see what kind of outcome you hope will come as a result of this film being released?
Well, one of the most striking scenes in the film is a verbatim depiction of testimony from another abortion provider. And I don't remember this doctor's name, but she's played by Janine Turner in the film. And she talks about how substandard Gosnell's facility was. But Gosnell's attorney presses her and says, what happens in your facility if an infant is born alive? And she says, that never happens. And he said, okay, fine, but let's say that it did. And she said, very reluctantly, that admitted that we would offer comfort care, which simply means the baby would be left to die. And then Gosnell's attorney makes the point that, gee, Dr. Gosnell was a bit more humane, wasn't he, by snipping their spines to bring about their demise. And, the doctor sits there stunned on the witness stand because he's made a point there. I mean, if we are supporting late-term abortion for any reason, which we do in our laws in America, what we are supporting is, paying someone to legally give an injection of digoxin into the heart, of the beating heart of a baby that could live outside of his or her mother's womb, to kill that baby in utero and then bring about a stillbirth. That's what late-term abortion is, unless, of course, they're using a procedure that involves pulling the baby out with forceps, which generally cannot be done intact. I mean, I don't want to be graphic here, but these are the facts. And, so late-term abortion remains legal in many states in the United States. I think where we go from here, Neil, is we have to work on both fronts. As people who feel and see and sense and know that this is wrong, morally abhorrent, that we cannot treat the youngest members of the human family this way, we have to dry up the demand, right? We have to so support women and families that nobody ever needs an abortion. But until that happens, we absolutely need to, stop the supply by whatever means, making it illegal. I shouldn't say whatever means. Of course, we never would resort to violence. But we need to make it illegal, and we need to see to it that not only people like Kermit Gosnell, who operated illegally, but all those who are operating under the cover of law would be prevented from doing so.
Kim Cattola from Cradle My Heart Radio is with us this morning, and getting some reflection on the Gosnell movie that released last week. There are other stories that we want to talk about and get a little global insight on the work of supporting life and advancing the cause. We'll talk about that in a moment. It's 18 past the hour. You're listening to Faith Radio Morning. It's 20 past the hour. Faith Radio Mornings, by the way. I'm Neil Stave. I'm talking with Kim Cattola today from Cradle My Heart Radio. Kim, a couple of important stories as it relates to abortion issues in Hungary and in Norway. Let's start with Hungary first.
Well, things are happening in Hungary that are sort of leading the way on pro-family policies in government in the European Union. Viktor Orban is serving his third consecutive two-thirds majority term in the Hungarian parliament. And he has said that demographics stand or fall on women. And so he has pro-women and pro-family policies in place that are really unheard of. And, of course, there's a lot of pushback because Hungary has a multi-party system now, and they have a new constitution, which was written in 2012. And it was written by a couple of parties, including the Christian Democratic People's Party. So those opposed to that ideology, of course, are opposed to the policies as well. And they're saying that, these family policies favor traditional marriages and families and raising children, which used to be the role of government everywhere, right? Because all nations know that healthy families make for healthy countries, right? But it's really stunning how they have been able to bring anywhere from 1 to 3% of the GDP of Hungary into play to support family policies like a 3-year maternity leave and subsidized child care and being able to, you know, help with families' medical care and overhead with their utility bills. It's really quite striking what a country can do when they decide to put the emphasis on helping middle-class families to survive and thrive. Abortion rates have dropped. Marriage rates have risen. I think there's a marriage incentive in the government's new policy as well. And I think there's like a one-time payment for women for giving birth to help defray the costs of, you know, the 9 months and the hospitalizations and medical bills that are, you know, that pile up so quickly when you're having a baby. But I'm really intrigued to see what will happen going forward with these policies that are new and just been put in place in the last year or so here.
You know, speaking of government policy, I was noting a posting on Facebook here recently that someone had said, you know, if you say you're pro-life, but you don't work toward feeding a child or educating a child or providing medical care, then you're only pro-birth. Is, you know, assuming then that, you know, if we don't support, I guess, government policies that, you know, feed and educate and provide medical care, something that, how do we win in the narrative when we're up against those kinds of positions and statements that get posted so frequently?
You know, if the spirit behind that statement, Neil, is let's save babies and let's help families thrive, that's great. Often when someone will make a statement like you're only pro-birth, they're not pro-birth. They believe abortion is the answer to poverty, to families in desperate circumstances. They believe that abortion is the most humane alternative if we don't decide to all come together and nationalize child care or whatever else is on the agenda. And I think it's, you know, of course everyone wants a child to be supported with whatever government policies and resources we can bring to bear. Nobody in the pro-life world is against that, Neil. But to say that if the government falls short of being able to provide that, then the best answer is to kill the children is a severe moral failing in the thinking of someone who would advance that idea. We can't solve our problems, whether they're economic or societal or relational. We can't solve our problems by eliminating children, by willfully bringing about, you know, the death of innocent human beings, which is what abortion is, elective abortion is. And so, yes, to be pro-life and to not pursue universal health care for children, for example, you know, rescuing children is job one. Over 1 million a year are dying in legal abortions, and rescuing them is job one. And no one would say to the Cancer Society, well, you don't treat heart attacks. You don't research, you know, heart problems. You're not really in favor of public health. No, each organization has its mandate and pursues its primary purpose. And those who are involved in rescuing children who are abortion vulnerable and helping their mothers to choose life have a lot of work cut out for them. And it's a battle that's not even close to being won. 45 years on now, yeah. Plus since Roe v. Wade was, you know, made abortion legal.
Kim, we only have a minute left. Just to say a word about the court sided with a doctor fired for refusing to do abortions. That story out of Norway.
Yeah, everyone should be able to act upon their deeply held beliefs. And this particular doctor objected to inserting IUDs into her patients because they have been shown to be abortifacients. And this is based on the idea that life begins at conception. IUDs work on the idea that after conception, the IUD interrupts implantation. And some say, and I agree, that this is an abortion. It's a birth control method which brings about an abortion. That's how it reaches its effectiveness. And the doctor said she didn't wish to do it and was threatened with losing her position. And the courts upheld her claim. And I would hope that in the United States and everywhere in the world, those who seek to help women and recognize that as obstetricians and gynecologists, they have two patients, would be able to act upon those deeply held beliefs as well.
Kim, I always appreciate the updates and a reminder of the important work that needs to be done still in this pursuit of life. Always glad to have you on the show.
Thank you, Neil. I hope everybody sees Gosnell movie. It will really leave an impression upon you. And it's a story everyone needs to know. Thanks for the opportunity today.
27 past the hour. You're listening to Faith Radio Mornings. And coming up in a moment, we've got Lighten Up with Ken Davis. Has some thoughts about his wife. He'll tell a story or two. That's just ahead. A good word to honor your wife today from Ken Davis here. 30 past the hour. It's Faith Radio Mornings. And coming up here in a few minutes, Kent Kaiser from the University of Northwestern in the Communications Department that joins us, as always, for some reflections on the news of the day. We have a reminder from Jim Garlow that America is worth saving. We'll hear that here in about 10 minutes. And we're also going to talk about finding passion in your work. Get a little highlight on that in just a few minutes. Stay tuned for more. Twenty-five minutes before the hour on Faith Radio Mornings. Coming up next hour, we'll talk with Robert Dickey. Robert was the past CEO of Crown Ministries and has written several books relating to work and finding a job you love. Looking forward to getting some of his conversation. We're in the midst of record low unemployment. And yesterday, one of our guests is Jay Richards. Jay is a professor and an author and talked about work and how finding passion in our work is important, but we need to find work that helps others.
If you want to succeed, at least in the economy, find something that you might be good at that would also provide things that somebody might actually want. If you do it successfully, we know from happiness studies and workplace studies that your passion develops. You get excited, even if it's a boring thing, like the man, I tell the story in the book of a man in Wisconsin who owns a septic tank company. Well, you know, no one would imagine, okay, I'm going to be passionate about septic tanks, but he found himself passionate about it because he found a way to serve other people and to do it successfully and to provide for them and for his family. That's where you want to look for passion. Channel your activities into socially beneficial activities. Train yourself to be able to do those things. And then the passion will follow and it will emerge and it will inspire your work. But don't assume that, well, just because you have a passion for, being a professional basketball player or being a professional singer or whatever, that anybody's going to actually freely pay you to do that. That just doesn't follow.
Kent Kaiser is passionate about being a professional basketball player, but he's at the University of Northwestern in the Communications Department. He joins us regularly here each Wednesday morning, and we'll talk with him in a minute about some of what's going on in his world and look at what's going on in our world. That's all coming up on Faith Radio Mornings.
America is worth saving. So what will you do? There's a choice you must make. This is Jim Garlow. We must become engaged. You may think the nation is too far gone to be restored, but Psalm 11:3 asks a crucial question. When the foundations are being destroyed, what can the righteous do? It may sound like good people are powerless and don't know what to do, but that's not what this verse is really saying. Another rendering in Hebrew is, when the foundations are being destroyed, what is the righteous one doing? In other words, in this dark season, God is still up to something, and we need to join with Him in this work. We need to take a bold, public, biblical stand and begin fulfilling God's purpose by getting involved in all of culture. This is winnable. So take heart. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
That music introduces our segment with Kent Kaiser. Kent from the Communications Department, the University of Northwestern in studio. Once again, here we're at 22 before the hour. And Kent, I always look forward to talking the news of the day with you. Good morning.
Thanks for having me on.
The year going well so far?
So good.
Okay.
Yeah, we're about halfway through the semester.
Feels like that's gone by quickly.
Yeah, it has.
Okay. All right. And have you been grading any papers yet, or did you say that
till
the end?
I'm swamped now.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Good. All right. Well, I know you had opportunity yesterday to hear Chief Justice John Roberts speak. He was at the University of Minnesota.
That's right. Yeah, he spoke at the University of Minnesota. You could see the whole speech on C-SPAN has it up on their website right now. But it was interesting because he started out by speaking from a podium and kind of obliquely addressed the rancor that's been taking place in Washington over the last few weeks over the Kavanaugh hearing without mentioning Kavanaugh. Specifically, everybody, of course, knew what he was talking about. And then there was a conversation between him and Professor Stein, who this lecture series is named after. And Professor Stein has been at the University of Minnesota for something like 60 years. Mm. And so he started there as an undergraduate. But it was interesting to hear his take on being an attorney and things like that. He gave some really interesting advice. And, you know, he said to begin with, that in his remarks that the courts, well, he respected the legislative branch and that they speak for the people, that the courts do not, that the courts speak for the Constitution. And he gave some good examples of why that's important and how the court needs to be independent and not follow sort of political winds. And he actually pointed out a couple of times when the courts did follow political winds, and it was probably a big mistake, for example, upholding Japanese internment camps back in World War II, and a couple of other examples. But he also pointed out, you know, the independence is what led to Brown versus Board of Education and some other things that probably wouldn't have been politically popular. And he also talked about, interestingly, how sometimes he has to rule in ways that he doesn't personally like. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, flag burning. He doesn't agree with it, but he understands the Constitution allows it. And also, he pointed out Westboro Baptist Church and their protests of military veterans' funerals and how vile those protests are and how he hates it. But he had to write the opinion that supported their right to free speech as much as he you could tell from just his demeanor as he was talking about that how it repulsed him to have to write that opinion, but it was what was right with the Constitution, and I think that wound up being an 8-1 decision or something. So
The influence of the court, of course, has become pretty significant. You know, the president has appointed a number of justices, and just wonder, you know, where is Congress going to sort of get back to its place of creating law and making determinations, or is the court going to become the determiner of all things here in the years to come?
Well, he kind of talked about this and how he said the court basically stands in the way of the legislative branch doing anything unconstitutional. And so, you know, I think the court understands its place and understands that division. And I think he's hopeful that the legislative branch will, you know, do things that are constitutional. It was interesting, you know, too, he talked about how the polls show that most people can't even name one Supreme Court justice, and how 10% of Americans think that Judge Judy is actually one of them, which he is not, obviously.
Okay.
He said that was a good thing.
It's sad that you had to put that clarifier in there, but that was probably important.
but he said he thought that was actually a good thing that people couldn't name a Supreme Court justice because, after all, they do put on these black robes to sort of erase their individuality. And so I guess, you know, what I took from that is I would hope that kind of continues to be the case, that people don't know the justices in a way. But, you know, the way the legislative process or the confirmation process went, particularly with Kavanaugh, it's hard to believe that name won't stick with people and they won't be able to name that one. And unfortunately, because of the politics attached to that one, I think that's probably detrimental to the court. It was interesting too. He took a lot of questions from people from the audience for the last half hour or so, and it was By the way, the whole thing was very respectful. He received a standing ovation at the beginning and at the end, and Professor Stein said that they would be holding to courtroom decorum for this forum, and everybody did. And even the questions from undergraduates were interesting, and one of them asked him why he went to law school. And this kid was obviously trying to figure out why he should go to law school. He kind of knew he wanted to go to law school, but he must have been trying to justify it with his parents or something. I don't know. The cost is pretty high and everything. And Justice Roberts basically said that when he got out of school in 1976 as an undergraduate, there just weren't any jobs for history teachers. Mm. He was a history major. And so he didn't really recommend that somebody fall into law so haphazardly as he did, although it certainly worked out for him. But he said basically that that's why he got into law, and he still enjoys history as his recreational activity for, like, when he goes to look for something to read on vacation, that's what he'd be looking for. But he really recommended that anybody thinking about law school think about it very carefully about exactly what they wanted to do, because the business has changed so much since he was in law school that now the business side of it doesn't necessarily work out. In other words, the financial side of it, he was suggesting. Now, I think lawyers get paid like crazy, but I mean, he made it sound like the financial side of it doesn't necessarily work out for a lot of attorneys, and many of them kind of go into it with some idea of what they're going to do or what they might enjoy, but find themselves not doing those things and really hating their work. And so it was interesting, because the kid had said that when he brings up – the student who asked the question said that when he talks about going to law school or asks people why he should, they say – a current attorney say, don't. And so Justice Roberts didn't quote quite that far, but he really made the kid kind of think about why he would want to go to law school in the first place.
Too many lawyer jokes.
I know.
It's probably.
I know.
Well, it's not a joke, but we have elections coming up here in a few weeks, and we'll take a quick break and come back and talk a little about some of what's going on in terms of key races, and also talk about the U.S.-Saudi relationship as a result of that recent disappearance by the journalist in Turkey. So that's all coming up in the moments ahead as we talk more with Kent Kaiser here on Faith Radio Morning. We're 12 minutes before the hour, and Kent Kaiser is in studio today talking about what's going on, news of the world. I want to talk about upcoming races for the House and the Senate. Several battleground states, you follow politics closely. What are some of your thoughts here about 3 weeks out?
Well, I think the Republicans are pretty hopeful at this point. The Kavanaugh hearings seem to have galvanized Republican activists in key states. And so it looks like where Democrats might have at some point had some hope of taking over the Senate, now it looks like it's swung the other way and the Republicans might actually pick up a couple of seats. There are certain ones like Senator Heitkamp in North Dakota who seem to be beyond coming back, and so I think she'll be beat. And I think there are several others that are very close. It'll be interesting. I am always a pessimist when it comes to predicting elections, I got to tell you, because I don't believe what's going to happen until that night. But yeah. I've seen too many times where it's not turned out the way it was supposed to, according to the polls. But I think that the Republicans stand a pretty good chance of taking the Senate. Now, I think that they're probably going to lose the House. But it's not going to be some big blue wave. It'll be a blue ripple.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's
we'll know in a couple weeks.
Well, that's right.
Right.
We will. Yeah. So, of course, there's still an opportunity to cast your vote. I got my vote sticker yesterday.
Nice.
A lot of people
go early and do it.
Which affects the polls too, doesn't it? I mean,
yeah, it does. That's right.
Can't really tell.
You can still change your mind, of course, but
that's true. It's hard to know what to think about what's happening in as a result of the interrogation or the investigation going on about Saudi Arabia's involvement with the Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi. Mike Pompeo says Saudi Arabia's leaders are committed to conducting a thorough and transparent investigation into his disappearance.
Well, it sounds like the last I saw, it looked like the Saudis were ready to admit that the journalist died during interrogation, which really makes you kind of wonder what that interrogation was all about. I mean, exactly what was involved, but I don't know, we'll see. It's It's an interesting story because it's a Washington Post reporter, and so, you know, it's gotten a lot of legs because of that. You have to wonder if it had been a journalist for some other organization, if we'd be hearing about this. And you kind of wonder if this is just sort of the way they do business. And this one just happens to be exposed. And unfortunately, I think that we're probably going to find out that the journalist is, in fact, dead, and it probably is going to be a little bit of a strain on Saudi-U.S. relations. We've had some good inroads with Saudi Arabia in helping us against Iran, helping us with Israel and so on, and hopefully those things won't be strained.
We always run the risk of strained relations when you're dealing with tyrants.
Right. Exactly.
What can you do? I know you had a chance to see the Gosnell movie last night.
Yeah, I went to see it last night. I'm highly recommending it for everybody. I feel like for those of us in the pro-life movement, this is something that we've all worked for over the years to bring to light just exactly how horrific abortion is and how abortion doctors will have pushed the bounds to the point of killing actual live babies after they've been born. And that's what this shows. And it's a powerful movie, and you don't see the gore. It's implied. And you have powerful performances from the actors who play the main roles. I think it's very much a sort of a mainstream movie. This isn't some kind of, cheesy movie or anything. It's extremely well acted and just very powerful. I'm recommending it to everybody. And it hasn't gotten much press, I think, because of the subject matter. And in fact, the media had kind of a blackout on it, but the movie came in the top 10 over the weekend for a couple of days, and I think it remained at top 12 yesterday when I went to the theater. And I think maybe it was a discount night. I think it was only $5 and something for my movie, so I think I happened upon a discount night. But the theater was full, and so it was good to see. But it's very powerful. Be prepared, for a movie where you're going to feel emotional, and it's going to be a sad movie.
Yeah. I was watching some news reports recently, though, talking about just the issue of abortion and how central that is to what's been going on, certainly with the Supreme Court nomination of Kavanaugh here, and that, when you see pictures of, a 16-week-old, a 20-week-old baby, it's clearly a baby. I mean,
well,
the pictures have just changed this whole dialogue.
That's exactly right. And in this movie, it's a picture that turned you can see in this drama, docudrama, that it was the pictures that turned the jury. And they don't show you the picture, which is very interesting. You have to go home and look online to see the picture that the jury got to see of what was supposed to be an aborted baby that was actually born alive. And then this doctor killed it. And, in that movie, by the way, there was one kind of note about how took place in Pennsylvania, and Governor Ridge, who was a Republican and a pro-choice Republican, by the way, prevented anybody from investigating any complaints on abortion clinics. And I think this goes to the point that you cannot trust a wolf in sheep's clothing. Just because they call themselves a Republican does not mean that they're going to be on the side of the pro-life movement. And so, people who say, oh, well, at least it's a Republican. No, do not trust somebody who's not pro-life when they're in office.
This issue is going to continue to be front and center, isn't it, for years to come?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, but I think, again, I think this is the movie that we worked for because it shows, even this was a pro-choice attorney who worked on this, the district attorney, and even she saw how this abortion had moved into murder. And, people, even in the later stages of gestation, people now see that that is a life, like you said, and that is progress. And when you see that being a mainstream view, that there shouldn't be a baby aborted after at least the 24 weeks or whatever it might be, at least that's progress, where people are saying, yeah, that's a life in there, and that didn't used to be the case. And so I think that that's something that we can be thankful for, that the mainstream view is coming our way. And I mean, again, I think that's what we've worked for all these years is in the pro-life movement, is to get people to first of all admit that it's a life and recognize it and fight for it, which is what happened in this case in Pennsylvania, where this pro-choice attorney from the district attorney's office is the one who actually prosecuted Gosnell. they had to make it into a murder trial, of course. And, you know, that was very clear that the powers that be didn't want this to be about abortion. But we all know it was. Yeah. And it's a powerful, powerful movie. I highly recommend everybody go out and see it. We need to support this kind of a movie as conservatives if we want more movies like this. And we do need more movies like this.
Yeah, as you know, I mean, the first couple of weeks really are critical, isn't it?
That's right. I mean, and right now this isn't on that many screens. Yeah. And so on a per-screen basis, this movie is actually doing amazingly well. I think it's in fifth place or something in terms of the number of screens it's on. But I mean, I had to seek it out. I mean, like, it wasn't at my normal movie theater. Sure. I had to go to a different one. I mean, granted, I'm in the Twin Cities, so it was only 10 minutes away. But, you know, I mean, I did have to look it up and figure out where to go. And so I do recommend that people seek it out and go and see it as soon as you can.
Kent Kaiser, always good to visit with you. Kent's from the Department of Communications, the University of Northwestern, and is a regular guest here on the morning show, and always good to see you. Thanks again.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, we'll take a little break, wrap up hour one. We're going to talk Canada next hour, as well as talk a little bit about work and unemployment and the ministry, all that coming up in the moments ahead. One of the stories in the news today, a Palestinian baby is in critical condition after receiving a heart transplant from a Jewish child. A doctor at the hospital last week said the transplant was the first time a Palestinian baby had received a heart from a Jewish child. The doctor said there are several miracles associated with the transplant. The family of baby Musa says they'd like to meet the family of the Jewish donor to thank them for their generosity. Coming up on Breakpoint today, we'll talk about a different kind of donor and a kind of a sad reality of the world in which we live. You want to listen for Breakpoint coming up in about a half an hour. Before that, Robert Dickey joins us, past CEO of Crown Ministries. And then we'll talk Canada and talk about how the church is growing anew in Canada. Some exciting things happening there. We'll get an update on that with a pastor just outside of Toronto. That's all ahead. If you missed any part of the morning show so far, you can always check out the podcast where we store all those interviews and many more. Go to myfaithradio.com and click on the Faith Radio Morning Show page.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.